morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of the program. From very high above, all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday. This morning on the program, I have a great interview with author of the book, Rules for Defeating Radicals, Chris Adamo. We've been trying to set up this discussion for nearly a year, but our schedules never did work together. So finally, this week, we were able to sit down for a few minutes and talk about his book. To understand the title of the book, Rules for Defeating Radicals, you first need to know who he's arguing against. Saul Alinsky was a community organizer back in the 1930s and 1940s, and he wrote this book called Rules for Radicals. It is the blueprint for the American left in this country. Both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama studied Alinsky's work extensively. Without spoiling the interview for you, all you really need to know about Alinsky's book comes from the acknowledgement page, and I quote, "Lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical, from all our legends, mythology, and history, and who is to know where mythology leaves off and history begins, or which is which, the very first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that at least he won his own kingdom, Lucifer." End quote. Yeah. So anyway, our pal Chris Adamo wrote a book called Rules for Defeating Radicals. Here's our discussion. Joining me via Zoom is author of the book Rules for Defeating Radicals, Chris Adamo. Chris, welcome to Cowboy State Politics.
I greatly appreciate being on here with you, Dave.
We've been trying to put this together for a while. How long has it been? Yeah. A year or something?
Yeah, we met at one of the campaign meetings for Harriet Hageman in 2022, summer 2022. So yeah, it's good we finally got around to it. But I heard your podcast the other day discussing the Rhino class, the Liz Cheney Republicans talking about civility and how we need to be civil by complying with them. Of course, then when it's their turn to, you know, to body slam us. Excellent recording, excellent podcast. And so that's why I wanted to get back to you and say, keep up the good work.
Well, I appreciate it. And you're exactly right. You know, they want civility in terms of we don't attack them. But when it comes to setting the record straight and taking their arguments head on, well, then they don't know what the word civility means. So first thing I always do on the program when I've got a new guest is ask you to just tell my audience a little bit about yourself. So who is Chris Adamo?
Well, okay, I'm living in Missouri right now, but I'm a Wyoming native. I was born in Cheyenne and then lived elsewhere in the country, moved back there after the Challenger blew up in 1986, lived there for 32 years until I retired, and got heavily involved into Wyoming politics at the grassroots level for much of that time. And it became very obvious very quickly that, you know, we keep hearing that Wyoming is an overwhelmingly Republican state. And as far as the mindset of the people, the grassroots, the good people of Wyoming are, they're good conservatives and patriots. The problem is the political class had such a Republican dominance that it became one party rule. And the average citizen, it's like if, as long as the politicians leave alone the Second Amendment and don't try and push for a state income tax, everything's okay. I can go about my business. Well, the political class became very entrenched and self-serving. And when we showed up trying to deal with basic issues of right and wrong and real conservatism, such as the pro-life issue and things of this nature, we got laughed out of the room. And I suddenly realized that we were dealing with a bunch of people that were essentially Vermont Democrats. But if you move to Wyoming, you put an R by your name and then just continue business as usual. Stay away from those two hot button issues, the state income tax and the Second Amendment, and then you can pretty much get away with whatever. And so we were losing battles against these people, and a lot of them outwardly call themselves Democrats, but a bunch of them call themselves Republicans, but they're leftists. And I was seeing us lose battles that we should be winning because of their dirty tricks. And that's when I realized that I went back and sourced out the dirty tricks and the games that they were playing, and came back to the fact that they were using Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals to undermine us. You know, it's not rules for the majority. It's not how do we all get together and create a utopian society. It's how does a little leftist fringe manipulate the majority through intimidation and mockery and other things of that nature. So somebody needed to write a book to say, this is how we fight these people. And eventually I realized that somebody was me, and that's why I wrote my book, Rules for Defeating Radicals.
Well, it's a great read, and I'm interested to get more into it as we continue the conversation. But you're exactly right. You know, there are a lot of folks that are in elected positions right now that not that long ago, they were Democrats. The case in point is probably Shelley Duncan. The year before she was elected to the House, she was a card-carrying member of the Democrat Party and got beat handily in an election. And then she switches to a Republican, and voila, now she was elected. Now, fortunately, we beat her in the last election, but she's a classic example. Tell me about your book. I mean, you gave us kind of the broad strokes of it, but let's just name like the top three big tactics that the left uses that you witnessed happening here in Wyoming.
Well, if you were to put an umbrella over the whole thing, it's the fact that on any issue, what they do is they find a way to claw their way onto a phony moral high ground from which they attack us from their virtuous position. And then we reflexively, and I call it battered conservative syndrome, where we just automatically go into this defensive posture and start defending ourselves against the accusations. And the overall picture is just that. Alinsky, he didn't teach people how to deal with the real issues at hand so that we could honestly have a debate on what's best for the country. It was a presumption that their Marxist leftist agenda was going to bring on utopia, and any lie, any dirty trick needed to advance it would be worthwhile, because the end game is a worthy one. And so this is what they do, dirty tricks. Our problem is we keep trying to play fair within the boundaries of their dirty tricks. And when you do that, you're fighting a defensive fight. If you fought a defensive fight perfectly, you'd break even. Well, of course, you never fight it perfectly. So we're just trying not to lose ground. They continue to advance. We've continued to retreat. And you could look at the condition of the country where it's at now, compared to what it was 20, 30 years ago. And they've been advancing on us.
You mentioned one of the big things that politicians try to stay away from in the state of Wyoming, and that's a state income tax. But increasingly, if you pay attention, they've been moving closer and closer to instituting that. And, you know, of course, they can't take the big broad swing at it and say, hey, surprise, we're going to pass an income tax. So they take it a little piece at a time. And, you know, on the program, I've detailed a lot of different efforts. The first one, and it probably wasn't the first one, but the first public one, they called it Tax Reform 2000. That one, it failed miserably. Then they had another one a little bit later called it Vision 2020. But if you dig into it,
sounds so utopian.
I know. And you know, there's videos online where these people are saying stuff like, well, we're going to tax people 100% of the value of their home. Mm-hmm. And it, just like the radicals that Saul Alinsky was, I'm just going to use the word training, though he didn't really do any training. People learn from his book.
His was the playbook, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Is that you only show your cards when you think that the audience is all on your side, and you have to really dig into these folks to find out what they're about.
Yeah. And it's always, again, presented from this moral high ground. I'm listening to what you're talking about with the state income tax. One of my rules, rule number four, is never accept baseless leftist assertions of cause and effect, which are vehemently proclaimed as inarguable truth, but are only enabling propaganda. They will come out and they will give you, for example, just using the income tax as an example, what they want to do is maneuver things into a place where they suddenly proclaim, we have starving children in the streets, and unless you have a state income tax, those kids are going to starve. And from that point forward, if we don't play our cards right, every time we come out and say, I don't want a state income tax, well, then you're for starving the children. You hate
children. Yeah, why do you hate the children?
Right. And this is exactly what they do. Instead of us stopping right there and saying, this is baloney, there's no reason those children are starving, There's no reason why we can't take care of our infrastructure with the money that we already have in there. What did you people do to squander that money and to misuse that money? At that point, see, we're not going on the defensive. We're going on the offense and we're putting them on the spot. But if we accept their premise that, well, gee, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to starve children. Please forgive me if I hurt some innocent child. I'm sorry. I can't win from that position. And that's how they reflexively put us there. And we reflexively respond that way.
Yeah, we totally take the bait every time. Yeah. A perfect example of what you just talked about is the revenue committee, or it's not the revenue, it's transportation, highways and Veterans Affairs. But they're moving a bill for a new tax on fuel.
Another one.
Yeah. And the premise is we don't have enough money for our roads.
Yeah.
We can't hire enough snowplow drivers. Well, the reality is they just put $1.4 billion in the bank because they didn't have a use for it. So, you know, so what did you do with all that cash? Why can't we use that to fix the roads?
Yeah, the idea is not to actually, you know, they say, well, we saved $1.4 billion. No, you only saved it if you actually turn around and disperse it back to the taxpayers who put it in there in the first place. Anything else you did, it's, as you said, it's amassing it for their further pork, frankly. And again, we always put some virtuous sounding label over the whole thing for the roads or for the veterans or something, where there's plenty of other misused funds that could have gone there. They're not going to go there, but now we need this, or those things get neglected. And so, yeah, I referred to it as a fiscal shell game that they play, where they one way or another are continually telling you somehow you have to get by with less because they can't get by with the amount that they already have. So you, Mr. Peasantry taxpayer out there in the sticks, you have to learn how to do with less, because we're the important people up here in the bureaucracy and we can't do with less.
Yeah, and the perfect example, and it comes up every single legislative session, is education.
Education. Yeah. That's exactly because if you vote against education in any way, shape, or form, that goes back to my baseless leftist assertion of cause and effect. Because if you vote against throwing more money at a school system that is deliberately failing, and I'll explain that in a minute, if you vote against throwing more money at them, then you hate children. You want to see children ignorant and helpless and illiterate for the rest of their lives. In truth, the school system has been the biggest revolving door of money laundering in not only Wyoming's history, but in just about every state out there. Because if the schools actually start improving education and boosting test scores, they suddenly lose their biggest excuse to ask for more money. As long as the test scores are going down, then they can say, hey, scores are going down, we need more money. So in other words, you incentivize failure in the school system. It's no wonder they don't teach any worthwhile academics anymore. And we're telling these kids that, you know, that they can take hormone poisoning and genital mutilation, and a boy can become a girl, whatever, instead of teaching them American history and Wyoming history. We don't want them learning and succeeding, because we don't have any reason to bloat the budget at that point. It's the biggest scam in the whole governing business.
One of the biggest places that a lot of followers of Alinsky ended up was in labor unions. And one of the worst ones in the country is the teachers' union.
Yeah.
Shocker. It also happens to be the most powerful lobby in the state of Wyoming, the Wyoming Education Association. And they're the folks that are constantly saying, no, we're not teaching, you know, pornography to kids. We're not in favor of gender transition. And it's classic Alinsky tactics, deny, when the proof is on their website.
Right. It's out there for people to see. But again, if it's not state income tax or the Second Amendment, I'm going to go down to Walmart and not worry about it. And what we've got to do is raise awareness. You don't like what's happening when you see these drag queens in these classrooms? It's happening all over. It may not be happening to the exact same degree that it is in Berkeley, California, but it's moving in that direction. Are you going to do something about it, or are you going to wait till it gets there before you decide to take action?
while there haven't been, and just a little commentary on that subject, while there haven't been a lot of these drag queen story hours, if you know anything about statistics, and everybody always is aware of the phrase or the words per capita. Well, if you do the proportions there, per capita, the drag queen story hours that are happening in Wyoming affect a way larger percentage of children than they do in, you know, other cities. So there's no getting away from the tactics of the left. I mean, it's almost like they use Wyoming as their own little testing ground.
It's actually, yeah, to a major degree that happens. The mindset, well, it's not happening here in Wyoming. A lot of us, you know, kind of hid behind that. I remember back when I was living in Wheatland, and I had a friend whose wife was a librarian, and she was finding books in the library pictorially showing things like genital erections and stuff like this in the library, in the junior high school. And so, you know, it is going on. I mean, if that was 10 years ago, what's happening now? And we could go down the list of things. It didn't make a big stink back then. She just quietly removed the book and threw it in the trash. God bless her. But there's a lot of these things happening that if we aren't confronted directly with it, we just assume it couldn't possibly be going on here. You know, I'm living in the American heartland now near Kansas City, and there's a lot of that attitude. And of course, as you said, the left loves it. No, that's Berkeley, or that's just right-wing extremist fear-mongering. They're just a bunch of book burners. One way or another, they got onto their moral high ground. They put you in a defensive position. And if you accept that, you're fighting a losing battle. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take you to lose it.
Well, I've heard a lot of people say that they can't for the life of them figure out why the teachers union and all of these LGBTQ advocacy folks are so intent on including these pornographic books in the library and teaching, you know, this gender transitioning stuff in the classroom. Why is the left so intent on pushing that on students?
Well, there's several reasons. You got several disparate groups there that all see kind of a symbiotic relationship with each other. Countercultural leftists, the anti-Christian left, sees the destruction of the American family as a paramount importance in order to advance their agenda, their Marxist agenda. The LGBTQ whatever else crowd, part of their thing is simple recruitment. And that's exactly what's going on here. And we used to understand that, again, back before we got put so completely on the defensive. You remember the old pictures of the guy with the raincoat, the flasher. And yeah, you caught one of those in your neighborhood. And if the guy escapes with his life, he's very lucky. And now these people are on the public payroll, and they're telling your kids that they're the good guys, and anybody who tries to oppose them is the bad guy. And what do kids go through in prepubescent years and puberty itself? There's a lot of confusion, misunderstanding, fear, insecurity and stuff. They're rife for these predators to be attacking. And again, the goal is recruitment. The goal in some cases is outright trafficking. And they're doing it on the public payroll. In the meantime, these kids, while they're learning about how to poison their bodies and how to be genitally mutilated and stuff like that, meantime, they're not learning American history. They're not learning about the Russian Revolution, the Marxist takeovers in Stalinist Russia and in Maoist China. They don't learn about those things. And so the fact that they're seeing it on the evening news, they don't connect the dots there. Well, they're, you know, an ignorant populace is more easily manipulated. So it's a win-win on that basis.
Well, in classic Marxist fashion, and by the way, it is textbook Marxism to try to remove young people from, you know, the evil grips of their parents. And yeah, as you said, destroy the traditional family, because if you do that, then kids don't learn, you know, morals, ethics, and the difference between right and wrong.
And those are the firewalls against the whole Marxist onslaught.
Yep, exactly right.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched it, but about a month ago, we had a launch party for an internet radio station that we put together. It's called the Independence Network. But two of my guests both escaped communist countries in the 1980s. And the very first thing that both of them will tell you, and again, two different countries, Czechoslovakia and Romania, The very first thing they'll tell you that the communists did was try to get young people away from their parents.
Yeah, Alinsky actually goes into the fact now, of course, he's a liar, but he goes into the fact that this is all geared towards recruiting the young people. His claim is that they have all the energy and fervor and all of that. And what actually it is, it comes down to, is they're naive. They're idealistic and naive. They accept these things without a much critical thinking. And by the way, critical thinking is one of the things the schools do not teach anymore. They teach dogmatic compliance with their ideology. If you engage in critical thinking, they more or less subject you to the leftist inquisition. And the goal is to intimidate you from asking any questions and totally mock and denigrate you in front of everybody else, to totally humiliate you and use you as an example to the others. Don't you dare question our orthodoxy. And this is the way classrooms are being conducted anymore. Right down to the fact that if you as a kid come out and say, hey, they're not letting me have free speech, boy, you're the enemy. And which is itself more of the indoctrination.
On my program this morning, I was talking about Bill Maher's latest piece, and he said that the way he described it is, the situation we're in is we have, a bunch of people who really aren't that smart, who are not educated, and we're allowing them to force us into agreeing with whatever ridiculous thing comes out of their mouth. And the reason why our children lap it up is, like you said, they're not taught critical thinking, they're not taught history, and they're rife for indoctrination, because that's exactly what's going on in not just Wyoming schools, but schools nationwide. I mean, they're being taught dogma, and that's all that it is.
Yeah, and there's another thing that goes on there, that when kids are stripped of every moral and spiritual precept of right and wrong, guiding their lives, as they've had in churches and things like this in the past, when they're stripped of all of that, then they have one motivation left, and that's this overwhelming desire, to the point of obsession, of being accepted by the mob, by the herd. And so at that point, some kid gets up in the classroom, some little boy gets up and says, I think I'm a girl. The only compassionate, decent thing you can do is agree with him. Now, if somebody says, hey, you're not a girl, I'm sorry, that's just reality, you don't have the right body parts to be a girl, you're the hateful one at that point. You're the ostracized one. And all these other kids feel virtuous and inclusive and all these other warm things to be part of this mob mentality. And you can get them to follow. And it's not just kids, by the way, because you see this with adults, with the whole leftist ideology. But you get them to follow these absurd things to the point that right now, I'm sure you've seen the news stories where Hamas is now the victims and Israel is the one that's brutal, because they're the brutal meanies. And you've got people all over the place coming, condemning Israel for stopping a murderous attack on their own people.
On my live program this morning, I had a soundbite from CNN where this commentator, I don't know who she was, but she was extolling the virtues of how well the kidnapped Israelis were being treated.
Yeah.
That they were it's amazing. This lady is saying they have shampoo and they have water and they have heat and air conditioning. That's really not that bad. And you listen to it and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
This lady doesn't even realize that these are kidnapped victims being held by a terrorist organization that is actively murdering innocent people. And here you have a major news outlet saying, well, no, I mean, they're actually treating them okay. I mean, it's absolutely amazing, Chris.
It is, and it's that herd mentality. And I'll also go back again, taking it back to Alinsky, is the fact that if you look at how the Islamists operate, they use the Alinsky tactics all over the place. They're always on their moral high ground. They're always the victims. And so leftists and Islamists, they end up being, they fall into this like-minded mentality because they are so kindred in how they think and how they approach things. So it really isn't surprising. You look at what's happening to kids in our public schools, And again, if it happened 20, 30 years ago, there'd be people taken out in the streets and flogged for it. And yet now they are the ones that are enlightening these kids and being inclusive and all of that. And you're the narrow-minded bigot. It's you know, because you're trying to protect these children from pornography, from sexualization, and ultimately from trafficking. You're the bad guy. I mean, that is the leftist Alinsky tactic in a nutshell. Is goes back to Isaiah 5:20. You call evil good and good evil. That's how they operate, and that's why the gist of my book is to tell our side: stop falling reflexively into their game, stop accepting their premises, and get back and stand on right and wrong as you should. And again, the short version of my book is stay the course, okay? But the thing is, they have a million different ways of keeping you from staying the course and getting you off track and getting you needlessly on the defensive. And so we've got to understand who they are, what motivates them. It's this consuming arrogance. It's this unleashing hypocrisy whereby they can do any evil and then be totally shameless about it because they have no conscience with it. Understand how they operate with their dirty tricks, their manipulations and things like that. And then we can go back and we can step through the rules about how, since this is who they are and how they're operating, how do you avoid it? My rule number one is never apologize unless an actual wrong has been committed. And then if an apology is truly warranted, you got to remain very specific as to the issue that's actually being addressed. Because if you say Pearl Harbor happened on December 8th, and it was really on December 7th, if they're attacking you, you say, sorry, I got that wrong. If you're not real emphatic about that, they're going to come up with a million different ways in which which they can use that to say you have no credibility when it was a really mild, pointless thing that they're making an issue over. And so if we do apologize, first of all, you should never apologize just because they criticize you. They say that they're offended or something. But if you do something wrong, then you're specific about it. Other than that, you apologize for offending them, and all you've done is validate their accusation, even if they were offended because you were telling the truth.
Well, and the reality is the left uses kind of a shotgun approach. You know, perhaps they don't know exactly what you're going to bite on. And so, you know, they accuse you of being unfeeling or uncaring or whatever the accusation is.
It's actually a very limited litany of accusations. They're going to hit you with one of them: racist, bigot, homophobe, all of those. And it's just something like that. Hater.
Exactly. And the only thing they're waiting for you to do is to tell them which direction to go next. That's why you have to be very specific in how you respond to these people. Let's take a quick break and get a word in from our sponsors. We'll get back to the program in just a second, but first, an absolutely outrageous profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage or a barn or maybe something bigger like a roping arena or a giant warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. Their phone number is 307-674-2532. They're the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So it doesn't really matter what type of building you've been thinking about for your property. Just call Nick and Jesse at 307-674-2532. Tell them what you've got in mind, and they'll handle all the details. That's Morton Buildings. Check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. Gunrunner Auctions is one of the nation's leading online auction houses, and they're celebrating their 26th year. Scott Weber, the owner, specializes in estate firearms. The first thing he does is he travels to the estate and appraises firearms for the heirs. He then takes them to his Cody auction facility, where he and his team research them, sometimes getting letters from the Cody Museum about each firearm's history. Every month, beginning on the 7th, Scott and his team post 500 fine firearms for sale. All of the auctions start at $20, and there's no reserve. You're not going to find a better selection of rare and hard-to-find firearms than at Gunrunner Auctions. Colts, Winchesters, and rare military weapons. And it's not just firearms. They usually have a wide selection of ammunition. Sometimes those hard-to-find calibers that you can't pick up in your local sporting goods store. So if you're looking for a firearm or you just need some ammunition or an accessory, go to GunRunnerAuctions.com. If you're thinking of buying or selling property, one of the most important items that you have is a real estate agent that you can trust. And that agent is Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate. Last year, she sold around $25 million worth of property. And get this, she's been known to talk buyers out of a property simply because it didn't meet their needs. So if you need an agent that you can trust, and you absolutely do, give Rebecca a call. Her phone number is 307-699-3519. One more time, that's Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate, 307-699-3519. Call her today. And now, back to my conversation with Chris Adamo, author of the book, Rules for Defeating Radicals. Books, and one of my favorite books in my collection is a world history book from 1952, I think, and in it is the Lord's Prayer in seven languages. And the reason why it's my favorite is, now if you were to take some of the books that are now in our libraries back and try to take them into a school in 1952, you'd probably be charged with a crime.
And deservedly so.
Now, if you were to take my 1952 history book into a school and use it, you'd probably be fired.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you would be, yes.
Absolutely. And it's what amazes me about it is just the juxtaposition between what we were doing then in education and what we're doing now. And it's, like you say, it's absolutely the opposite, which is a clear Alinsky-type tactic. So I want to move on. You've got a new piece out, and why don't you tell us about it and where people can go to read it?
Well, okay, it's on several websites. The title is Rhino Wyoming Governor Gordon Shows His True Colors. Now, I'm out here, you know, 1,000 miles away or whatever, and I'm watching the goings-on in Wyoming. And here's our Republican governor sounding like AOC, talking about, you know, all of the climate change hysteria and all these kinds of things. Frankly, not to sound callous about it, but you take a New York Democrat who comes to Wyoming and puts the R by his name, and then suddenly he's a Wyoming Republican. He's one of the real Republicans. You know, he's not one of those Freedom Caucus right-wing extremists. He's one of the real Republicans. And on these kind of credentials, the guy gets elected governor. What do you expect? The minute he's back amongst his Democrat buddies, he sounds like one of them, because that's where he's coming from. The biggest battle that needs to be fought in Wyoming, obviously, when you have two or three Democrats in the Senate and five or six in the House, the biggest battle you need to fight is not against the Democrats. It's against the rhinos who are actually doing their bidding. And I will briefly go back to my book there. About halfway through it, I realized I needed to add a chapter on rhinos, because I'm talking about Alinsky and the leftists. And I refer to the rhinos as the essential Alinsky fifth column, and a pretty extensive chapter on all the different characteristics of rhinos and their modus operandi. And people ask me, you know, how do you get such a background on this? The sad truth is I learned what I know about rhinos from dealing in Wyoming politics for several decades, because the Wyoming GOP back then, the party apparatus, was just totally rhino. You know, totally Liz Cheney Republicans, if you want to say that, the leftists, the so-called, you know, the imposters. The party apparatus now, which is separate from the legislature, they are true conservatives. They're true Wyoming patriots, okay? But you still got this mess in the legislature. You still got Albert Summers and some of the bills that I heard that he buried this last session.
Just amazing.
Absolutely indefensible. Things that you know that... the leftist Democrats in places like California pushing for an agenda, he was in a position to say, we're not going to let that happen in Wyoming. And he didn't do that. He deliberately kept our side from standing up to those things. So now those doors are open. You know, and we can go through just the government overreaches, the school system, the poisoning of the school system, things like this. Albert Summers was in a position to address all of that, and he flatly took the other side on it.
Well, without a doubt, Albert Summers is the most liberal speaker Wyoming has ever had, without a doubt. He votes with the Democrats an average of 80 to 85% of the time. The bills that he kept in his drawer were the very ones that are being pushed and approved in other states.
Right.
The pornography in schools, and, I mean, there was a whole list of them. But he didn't stop there, Chris. I mean, there were some good pro Second Amendment bills that were coming up in the legislature, and he sent them to the one committee that he knew would butcher them.
Yeah, and that's the kind of games that you play in that position. Again, if we were in a closely divided House and we were trying to keep the conservative agenda from falling, you know, in a 55-45 Republican House, we're trying to play hardball with leftists to keep them from advancing their agenda. Maybe you do some bait and switch things like that. But here he is in an overwhelmingly Republican House where he could have got it signed. He could have gotten, gotten it passed, and we could have gotten the governor to sign it if we had a conservative base that was facing him and saying, we expect you to act like a Republican. And no, he didn't. And I have no doubt personally now that he and Gordon are both on the same side in this, and they're both behind closed doors with little handshake agreements. You kill it this way, I'll kill it that way. The goal is to call themselves Republicans. They don't ever oppose the Democrats. They spend their time actually opposing the Christian conservatives and patriots in Wyoming.
You know, one of the terms that we don't hear a lot of, at least this year, I haven't heard it nearly as much as I have in previous years, but it's the term frontier Republicans.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what you think about those folks?
I think that it's such a great example of how the rhinos, go back to my chapter on rhinos, how they really operate. When I was there, you know, early 2000s, whatever, and we were trying to get real conservatives in, you don't dare criticize a fellow Republican. Well, this is what you hear from the rhinos, from the Liz Cheney Republicans, when we're trying to stand for something and they're trying to oppose it. Well, we don't dare criticize it because it's destroying party unity. It's a circular firing squad. It's Republicans eating their own. The minute you actually promote a really conservative agenda, these same people show up and they're taking every pot shot they possibly can at you. The goal on their part, again, no different than the leftists that actually call themselves leftist Democrats. The goal is to put you on the defensive. See, you stood for something, but you actually did something that was divisive. You actually were in a circular firing squad. You're taking pot shots at fellow Republicans and all of this sort of thing. When they come out, and you've seen, I'm sure, Albert Summers, some of the venom he's vented towards the Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, I did a whole episode on it.
Just based on the fact that these are true conservative patriots in the Freedom Caucus, and Summers is out on the warpath against them. You don't hear him talking about not being divisive at that point. Again, your thing that you did on Saturday was excellent, showing that the venom, the vigor with which the rhinos attack conservatives. You know, we can look at this in the U.S. House and Senate back in Washington there, where your John McCain's and your Mitt Romney's and people like this. They don't call the Democrats out for being a bunch of communist traitors. But by golly, if you're on the right and you're standing for constitutional principle, you're a hater. You're divisive. You're creating rancor. All the standard accusations. All the phony jabs that they throw at us to put themselves up on their phony moral high ground.
Absolutely, and it's the comment you have in your piece is, they're conducting their own nefarious politicking under the sanctimonious banner of frontier Republicans.
Yeah.
And it's, in classic Alinsky tactics, when the name you're using gets worn out or the term you're using gets worn out, you just move on to the next one. You know, so we've hammered frontier Republicans so much that now they're moving on to terms like the Wyoming caucus or traditional Republicans,
right,
or Or I've even seen some articles where they claim to be Reagan conservatives.
Oh, yeah. Because they figure you don't know what a Reagan conservative is. Just think about the fact that you had the terms on the left. You had liberals, progressives, you know, the enlightened ones. I mean, they do exactly the same thing. It's simply because whenever their true identity comes out, they have to run and hide from it. So they got to create another cloak. Whereas you want to call me the Freedom Caucus, you want to call me a conservative, a patriot, I'll take all of those things right now and stand by them because, you know, they all represent something good and I'm not afraid to say what they represent. Again, Marxism, at the root of all of this, Marxism was founded on lies. Okay. It was all about creating this utopia. It can only be advanced through lies if it's founded on lies. And those who follow that agenda, and Albert Summers may think that it's extreme to be comparing him to Marxists. Well, I'll compare him to the Wyoming Teachers Association. Then suddenly the boundaries between him and Marxists get a whole lot closer. But it's not going to be advanced, honestly. They're not going to come out and tell you, we want Venezuela, third world squalor, and people who are oppressed and afraid of being able to speak freely. They don't advance themselves that way. They've got to present this phony utopia. And I mean, reading Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, it's one dirty trick after another. And then in the end, the last few pages, they're going to create, I remember the word beautiful, this beautiful future for the world as a result of all these lies and dirty tricks. They literally are that hypocritical and disjointed in their thinking.
Absolutely, they are. Well, the book is Rules for Defeating Radicals. Chris, if my listeners want to get a copy of it, where do they find it?
It's at Amazon. Unfortunately, I've tried to get it published several other places, but it is at Amazon. You go to Amazon and just look up my name, Christopher Adamo, or look up Rules for Defeating Radicals, and you can find it there. It's a good field manual for our side to learn to fight effectively.
Well, again, thank you very much for coming on the program, and this has been a long time coming. So thank you very much, Chris.
You're certainly welcome. Hope to talk to you again.
That'll do it for today's installment of Cowboy State Politics. Remember, you can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Amazon Podcasts, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There you can find all of the shows, as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Sleepy Joe Biden and you can't remember what you had for breakfast, well, I really can't help you with that. But what I can help you with is why you should have never run for president. You can catch my live program every Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 11 on the Independence Network. Just go to the website, independencenetwork.us. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk again on Saturday. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.